Continuing with Peter Kropotkin from his memoir, Memoirs of a Revolutionist. The theoretical aspects, and this is Peter Kropotkin speaking, the theoretical aspects of anarchism, as they were then beginning to be expressed in the Jura Federation, especially by Bakunin, the criticisms of state socialism, the fear of an economic despotism, far more dangerous than the merely political despotism which I heard formulated there, and the revolutionary character of the agitation appealed strongly to my mind. But the equalitarian relations which I found in the Jura Mountains, the independence of thought and expression which I saw developing in the workers, and their unlimited devotion to the cause appealed far more strongly to my feelings. And when I came away from the mountains after a week's stay with the watchmakers, my views upon socialism were settled. I was an anarchist. There was, however, one point which I did not accept without having given to it a great deal of thinking and many hours of my nights. I clearly saw that the immense change which would deliver everything that is necessary for life and production into the hands of society. And I really appreciate his use of this word, society, in this context to mean all of us, acknowledging that we, the 99.999%, are everything. And that it is just, and that all we need is a very small percentage of that 99.9999% to know that we deserve a new world for us to begin to have it. We just need to start talking to each other about that world. Continuing, into the hands of society, be it the folk state of the social democrats, or the unions of freely associated groups, which the anarchists advocate, would imply a revolution far more profound than any of the revolutions which history had on record. Moreover, in such a revolution, the workers would have against them not the rotten generation of aristocrats against whom the French peasants and republicans had to fight in the last century, and even that fight was a desperate one, but the middle classes, and my comment, those classically trained, mission-imbued, newly minted, and gleaming fanatic, Plato's tribesmen, continuing, which are far more powerful intellectually and physically, and have at their service all the potent machinery of the modern state. And I have to say, hasn't it just got exponentially worse than when he wrote those words 150-some years ago? Exponentially worse, with the power of our creative, our inventiveness, unfortunately used, devoted to weapons of death placed in their hands. Is that trajectory, that tendency not obvious? Is it not clear? How urgent is our situation right now? How urgently we need to begin discussing an alternative based in our ethical stance, not in some science which is supposedly going to prove that our future freedom is inevitable. No, it is not. The folks who promoted that were also trained in this classically statist manner. Continuing. Moreover, okay. The potent machinery of the modern state. However, I soon noticed that no revolution, whether peaceful or violent, had ever taken place without the new ideals having deeply penetrated into the very class whose economical and political privileges were to be assailed. And my comment, take note, all you agent provocateurs, all you who are perhaps listening to those agent provocateurs who want to pose this as a matter of let's demonize some section of our 99.999%. Listen, if they claim to be anarchists, listen to one of its founders speak. Is this not a revealing, a portentous vantage from which to view our current situation? Has anyone taken it in? And I'm not talking about the 1%. I'm talking about the 99.9999%, all of us. How are we doing on this score? Because that 10,000, and we're just talking the folks who operate the interstate system and who work behind scenes to pull the strings of all this, the nation state machineries, is really not the point, is insignificant. If we, the vast, vast everything, begin talking about it. Continuing, I had witnessed the abolition of serfdom in Russia, and I knew that if a consciousness of the injustice, so maybe we are actually, my comment, talking about that 1%. Maybe that's the better way to look at it, because I was thinking about it as I was speaking, you know, that the folk he's talking about may very well be that 1% that we're encouraged to say is the problem. Because actually no one, except I think right here in this space that I've heard, is talking about the 0.0001%. So it is that 1% perhaps that Kropotkin and that we need to think about as we listen to Kropotkin's words. Those who are wealthy, but who aren't a member of that very exclusive tribe who have been trained to think of us as the cattle to keep herded, who have no nation allegiance, who have only a tribe allegiance to rule, to supremacy only. Continuing, I had witnessed the abolition of serfdom in Russia, and I knew that if a consciousness of the injustice of their privileges had not spread widely within the serf owners class itself, as a consequence of the previous evolution and revolutions accomplished in Western Europe, the emancipation of the serfs would never have been accomplished as easily as it was accomplished in 1861. And I saw that the idea of emancipating the workers from the present wage system was making headway among the middle classes themselves. The most ardent defenders of the present economical conditions had already abandoned the idea of right in defending their present privileges, questions as to the opportuneness of such a change having already taken its place. And my comment, clearly, it seems to me, he's right. We have to make our case, paint our global picture, show how we can all gleam authentic, how we, each one, show our brilliance, and that the global human society we make becomes a showcase of beauty mated with practicality and economy, simply because of that freedom to be what we are that we embrace. Continuing, they did not deny these owners of the means of production, quote unquote, they did not deny the desirability of some such change. They only asked whether the new economical organization advocated by the socialists would really be better than the present one, whether a society in which the workers would have a dominant voice would be able to manage production better than the individual capitalists actuated by mere considerations of self-interest. Manage it at the present time. Besides, I began gradually to understand that revolutions, that is, periods of accelerated, rapid evolution and rapid changes, are as much in the nature of human society as the slow evolution which incessantly goes on. And each time that such a period of accelerated evolution and reconstruction on a grand scale begins, civil war is liable to break out on a small or large scale. The question is then not so much how to avoid revolutions, and I didn't comment in the writing on this, but as I'm reading, I'm thinking it might make sense to say I don't think that at this juncture we are given how what we understand now given what we've learned from Karl Popper and Alice Miller and Martin Bernal about the degree to which our containment is about the thoughts we have been systematically conditioned to think. And given the circumstance of the internet and instantaneous global communication, that in transmitting these new thoughts, it is really not a matter of any sort of violent conflict. It is a matter of those ideas taking root in enough hearts that believe in them to work tirelessly to continue transmitting those ideas, the wave that Gramsci talked about, the tenderness that Gustav Landauer talked about, the softening of hearts. That is how we get a truly new social arrangement in which all of us, every human being, gets to live their gifts, gets to be free.